this remote meeting of the House Higher Education Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen. Vice Chair Christensen. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Albright, present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heinzelman is excused. Representative Howard.
Howard, present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, present.
Crenshaw, present. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, present.
Meckland, present. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted is excused. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative Kosnick. And with that, Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
I do see Representative Sandsted here. So,
Madam Chair, I will be here for this meeting.
All right, Representative Sandsted is present, and we do have a quorum.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 1st, 2022?
So moved.
Representative Sandsted moves approval of the minutes for March 1st, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 1st, 2022 are approved. And I just want to make sure that, just check with our committee legislative assistant. I did not hear Shelley, Representative Vice Chair Christensen on my end. You heard her on your end. I just want to make sure you heard.
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. I have Representative Christensen as present.
Okay.
Do you have excellent. Representative Kosnick? I had a hard time getting the link. Kosnick is present.
Representative Kosnick, I will mark as present.
Thank you. Excellent. Sorry about that.
No problem. Good job juggling schedules today, Representative Kosnick. And thanks for staying connected with me today. So nice to see you here. So first on the agenda, we have House File 2859 from Representative Howard. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we will plan to wrap up at 3:35. I will move that House File 2859 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 2859. Representative Howard, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. 2859 is a bill that improves our state grant program, providing real, tangible economic aid to students who need it most. As you all know, the state grant program provides need-based financial aid to lower-income and middle-income Minnesotans, and we can do more to help these Minnesotans afford the cost of their college. The state grant program serves students at public and private colleges, including students pursuing certificates, two-year degrees, and four-year degrees, and it's the state's primary tool to make the opportunity and the benefits of higher education possible for those students who have the hardest time to pay for college. It is also a significant tool that we have as legislators to advance racial equity in higher education, because 59% of Minnesota students of color receive a state grant. This bill increases the amount of a student's grant by reducing the expected student share in the state grant formula. Currently, the student share is set at 50% of the total recognized cost of attendance. And that consists of tuition and fees plus living and miscellaneous expenses. But the reality is expecting students are at that 50% level are having a very difficult time to afford College. And research from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education suggests that to be affordable for students, the student share should actually be set at 36%. And research from the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership found that the 50% student share significantly burdens students of color and Native American students, who are more likely to be low income, and this is negatively impacting college enrollment and completion. So what this bill does is reduce the student share from 50% of the total recognized cost of attendance to 46%. It's an important first step in adjusting the student share expectation to a level that is realistic for students with demonstrated financial need. And truly with an equity lens, this is the best method for us to be increasing investment in the state grant program. So a couple, just by the numbers, to keep in mind what this bill would do and the impact for students. Making this change would increase grants for the lowest income full-time students by between $670 to $1,170. And the 66,000 Minnesota students who receive the state grant would benefit from this needed change. The average grants will increase by 29% at community colleges, 20% at state universities, and 16.5% at the U of M and private colleges. These improvements will make a tremendous difference to the students who need our support the most. You know, we have heard from students all session long who are struggling with the cost of tuition and the cost of living. And this is the most direct way and best way this committee can hear that feedback and take action. I would argue that in recent years, we have not done enough when it comes to increasing the state grant program. And this year, we have an opportunity to change that. With a historic budget surplus, we can address the historic challenges facing Minnesotans, the challenges facing our students. Our top priority in a 30,000 foot way this session, I really believe, should be to lessen the economic squeeze and target relief to Minnesotans who need it most, and in this case, students who need it most. So let's put our students first by putting more resources directly into their pockets. Let's invest in the state program, state grant program. Thank you, Madam Chair, and would love to hear from our testifiers.
Thank you, President Barbara McDonald, is that who we're starting with today? Is President Barbara McDonald, the College of St. Scholastica. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, organization, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. I am Barbara McDonald. I serve as the president of the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, Minnesota. And I want to thank you and Representative Howard for this opportunity to share how impactful the state grant is in the lives of our students. As you heard, the Minnesota State Grant Program makes colleges more affordable for low and middle income families at private and public colleges throughout our great state. Our institution, St. Scholastica, serves approximately 3,500 students. Our formal opening dates back 110 years with a mission committed to providing educational opportunities to those who might not otherwise have access. And today we continue to serve a very diverse population of learners and a high number of students with exceptional need. I'd like to give you a little snapshot of our students. Nearly 80% of our students are from Minnesota and 27% are first generation students, meaning their parents or guardians did not graduate from a four-year institution. Some might find it surprising that over 37% of our students' family incomes are less than $50,000 a year. And a third of our undergraduates, about 900 students, receive state grants. And for these students, the support is critical to their ability to complete their education. As you know, the pandemic has affected many students' families financially and has also reduced the availability of student jobs and internships, making the grant even ever so more important. We are also concerned about the impact the pandemic has had on families of low-income students of color who have struggled to continue their education. So at St. Scholastica, affordability is a key priority and a partnership and promise that we've made to our students to do everything we can to support their educational journey. So what does this impact look like for students? Every year I hear from our students who are positively and profoundly impacted by the state grant. This past week I spoke to Rose, a promising student who graduated from Coleraine High School on the Iron Range and whose dream was to come to St. Scholastica. As a first-generation student whose family has financial challenges, she knew this would only be possible if she had financial aid to support her journey. So her success was very much tied to the support of the state grant. Well, let me tell you a little bit more about Rose. She has developed into an exceptional leader, one who will definitely be living out our mission of serving and transforming the world. As a rising senior, she serves as the vice president of the Student Senate, is the student trustee on the college's board, and has inspired so many other students who are just like her. First generation, economically disadvantaged, but holding tightly to their educational aspirations. Eventually, Rose will go on to live and work in Minnesota, just as 70% of our graduates choose to do. I also think it's important to celebrate how the state grant impacts our workforce by way of our student success. Scholastica plays a significant role in the workforce pipeline, particularly in the healthcare arena. Over 60% of our students are headed into healthcare professions, a sector of our state's economy that is hurting significantly for workers. We are constantly hearing from our healthcare providers like Ascensa, St. Luke's, Fairview System, and others about the critical role our graduates play at all levels of healthcare. And so our mission is strongly focused on diversifying the workforce with the very students who rely on the state grant to complete their education. The return on investment is overwhelmingly positive. Our institution ranks at the top for economic mobility. Our student default rates are one of the lowest in the state. And what this means is that our students graduate and contribute not only very positively to the economics of Minnesota, but answer to the call to work in industries that are in dire need of qualified workers, CNAs, nurses, physician assistants, therapists, mental health workers, and so on. The new state grant investments can really make the difference. The benefits would be long-lasting, impacting not just today's students, but future generations and their families. Put simply, these funds enable our students to attend college, earn a degree, secure a good-paying job, and achieve bright and hopeful futures. At a time critical of work shortages in key areas, providing support for the state grant is an important and timely investment, and one that will pay dividends to our state's economy and law and strong workforce. So thank you very much, Chair Bernardi, for allowing me to provide this information to you. And I believe now I pass this on to President Miller.
President Fainiz Miller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, I am Fainiz Miller, president of Hamline University, Minnesota's first university. I'd like to begin by sharing some stories about the students who attend Hamline University. One student is from the northern part of Minnesota. During her high school days, her father died, and her mother had difficulty surviving on a regular basis. So this student became responsible for her younger sibling. So when she started Hamline, not only was she trying to survive as a student, she was taking care of her younger sister until her mother was able to take over that responsibility. This student was able to come to Hamline because of the grant that she received from Minnesota. This student went on to become the vice president of the student government, interned at the State House, and herself is looking to one day become a state legislator. She also was a finalist for the Truman Fellowship. That's a student who had all these responsibilities that she had to take care of. But because she was able to get that financial support, it allowed her to be the kind of student that she needed to be at Hamline University. Let me tell you a story of another student who's from the Twin Cities. Hamline, like most institutions, have a 1 to 5 scale. And that 1 is students who are in the lower income bracket, but who are very capable students, but low income. Hamline took a chance on her. This student today, graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Hamline University and is now in her first year at Harvard University. She will come back, but it was the state grant that allowed her to matriculate at Hamline, be a successful student, and go on to not only raise her life expectation in terms of what she will do, but her whole family. And the same thing with our other student. Another, I could give you stories like that all day, but Hamline takes a chance on these students and brings them in and allows them to just soar the way in which we want a Minnesotan student to soar. That state grant, covered with what Hamline does, makes up about 9% or more of their overall package. Imagine what this student could do if they had more support. Imagine what this student could have done at Hamline in terms of taking advantage of all the opportunities that were available to her if she had a little more support and could do a little less in terms of having to worry about her family. More than 90% of the students at Hamline University and over 95% of our first year students receive some sort of financial aid. So Hamline is committed to making sure that every student who comes to us gets the financial support they need and are able to excel while they're here. Over 47% of this year's class is first generation. About 43% of this year's class is BIPOC. Again, we are committed to doing the right thing for all of our students. So if our student is looking for a place to go, Hamline opens his doors and said, come in, we will do all we can. But again, imagine if those students had more state support. They could finish when they need to. They could participate in an internship, because some of those students can't do internships because they can't afford to leave their work study job, or they can't afford to give up that other job that's helping to support them. Every student at Hamline would be able to complete an internship if they had more support. So that's just a sort of a snapshot of who our students are and what that state grant would do for them. There is much more that I could say to you, but I think you get the picture of what I'm trying to paint here, of how far that state grant would go and what that state grant would do. I could tell you about Hamline, but to me, hearing about our students that are the St. Scholastica students, that are the Augsburg students, that are all those students at all those other institutions, to me, you need to hear the story, the human being behind what that state grant does. And I thank you for what you've already done, and I encourage you to do more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President Miller. Now we have testifying today, Paul Cerkvenik, President of the Minnesota Private College Council. Please say your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm gonna have a few quick slides, and so I'm gonna share my screen now. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Cerkvenik, and I am the president of the Minnesota Private College Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 2859. And I want to thank Representative Howard for authoring this bill. I'd like to begin by sharing some data with you about the impact of the pandemic on college students and how that is connected to the investment in the Minnesota State Grant Program. As you all know, there's been a significant decline in post-secondary enrollment since the onset of the pandemic. Across 2 and 4 year institutions in Minnesota, total undergraduate enrollment declined by 3.4% from the fall of 2019 to the fall of 2020. But it is important to know that the enrollment decline has been much larger in students from lower income families. As shown on this graph, the decline in enrollment of Pell Grant recipients, who generally have incomes of less than $50,000, is 12%. By comparison, the decline in enrollment of non-Pell students is much smaller at just 2%. There are other data points about the decline in enrollment that are significant. New first-year students declined 9%. Enrollment of students of color declined 8%. And there was a 5% decline in the enrollment of first-generation students. Preliminary data from this fall suggests that these trends have continued in this school year. Who benefits from the state grant program? 44% of Minnesota undergraduates who enroll in Minnesota institutions receive a state grant. That's nearly half of all Minnesota students staying in Minnesota for their college education. And 59% are students of color and Native American students, and 67% of state grant recipients have family incomes of less than $50,000. These are the very students for whom the pandemic-driven enrollment declines have been the largest. And why is an investment in the state grant program a good investment? Decades of national research documents that increases in need-based financial aid have strong positive effect on college enrollment and college success, including increasing post-secondary enrollment, increasing retention and persistence, lowering student reliance on loans and working too much, and increasing degree completion and lowering student costs. The research also shows that excessive work hours have a negative effect on educational attainment and GPA, and that financial stress and student loan debt increase the likelihood of stopping out of college and have a negative effect on the persistence of students from low-income backgrounds. I think I'm going to jump over this slide because I think Representative Howard covered it well, but the lowering the student share will make college more affordable for students who receive state grants. And that's particularly important because it will reduce the pressure on them to borrow too much or work too much. For many lower income students, earning a college degree makes a transformational and multi-generational difference in their lives. According to the data from DEED and the Office of Higher Education, 70% of the jobs that pay a family sustaining wage in Minnesota require a post-secondary degree or certificate. And according to an MMB study, the state grant program provides a $4.10 return on every dollar invested. Investing in the state grant program will have a positive impact on students, colleges, our communities, and our economy. And that will make a world of difference for both the students and for our state. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cirkvenac. And now up with us next is Ilhan Ahmed from Augsburg University. Welcome to the committee and please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Ilhan Ahmed and I'm a senior at Augsburg University, majoring in biology and minoring in psychology. I was raised in Fargo, North Dakota and moved to Minnesota in 2009. I went to Hidden Oaks Middle School and Prior Lake High School. I spent most of my life surrounded by people who did not look like me nor understood my religious and cultural practices. It wasn't until high school that I met a group of POC students who helped me create an equity and diversity club at our school. It was a place where we could come together and share our experiences and not be judged for our differences. During my senior year in high school, I made myself the promise I would not put myself through an institution where I was forced to code switch, but instead embrace who I was. Thus, I came across Augsburg University, an institution that not only valued its students' educations, but welcomed their difference as well. I was excited to attend a university that not only had a diverse community, but as the first female in my family to attend a four-year university. During my time here, I joined multiple student orgs like Muslim Student Association, STEM Peer Mentoring, and I even became the president of the Pan-African Student Union this year. I was offered so many opportunities like working in the admissions office as a tour guide and as an Augie ambassador. Interacting with prospective students reminded me how grateful I am to be able to attend a university and the chance to watch young students experience what I did during my first college tour. And it was thanks to TRIO SSS that I was able to develop a degree plan and receive the academic support I needed to in order to complete my 4 years at Augsburg. Because of the Minnesota State Grant, I was able to not only pursue a bachelor degree, but I also had access to services like undergrad research and grad opportunities, which provided me with hands-on experience with genetic engineering during summer research. I even became an AugSTEM scholar, which opened a lot of doors and opportunities for me. Millions of other students like myself had the misfortune of encountering a pandemic while on their journey. COVID not only brought uncertainty into our lives, but had a strong mental toll. Because of the pandemic, I experienced severe anxiety and depression. With lectures being moved on Zoom and outside interactions being minimized, and hearing news of my friends' family members passing away, as well as fearing for my own family's members' lives, I started experiencing anxiety attacks. Not knowing what to do or how to help, I felt deeper and deeper into depression. As a result, I felt behind in school and lost the motivation and confidence to move forward with my education. Being a first-year college student was wonderful and exciting, but the amount of pressure that came along with it was overwhelming during the pandemic. With my grandfather passing not too long ago and finding out the passing away of two classmates this weekend, I realized that I should not only be motivated to move forward in life, but cherish the ones that are around me as well. I learned so many things during my 4 years here at Augsburg. I gained skills like leadership, communication, critical thinking, mindfulness, and acceptance. Because of the Minnesota State Grant, I get to treasure these experiences and the skills I gain. I would have not have been able to attend a college and pursue my passion for medicine if it had not been for the Minnesota State Grant. Therefore, I hope you continue to increase funding for future Minnesota students. Speaking from my experience, if I had an increase in funding for Minnesota State Grant, the level of stress and uncertainty that came with financial instability would have been reduced. But this would have allowed me to concentrate more on my studies and degree rather than looking for additional ways to pay for tuition. That's why it's crucial you consider funding, increasing funding for students like me who cannot afford to attend a four-year university. The Minnesota State Grant helped me build a future I am proud of. After graduation, I plan on furthering my education by applying for future research opportunities and one day applying for medical school. Thank you all for taking the time to hear my story and for making my passion and goals a reality.
Thank you very much for testifying today. And with us next is Stephanie Young and from Winona State University. If you could please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And we're hoping that we can wrap up the testimony in a couple minutes, if at all possible, so we have some time for member questions.
Of course. Can everyone hear me okay?
Sure.
Sorry, I'm on campus, so I have to wear my mask. But good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for this amazing opportunity to testify today.
Please say your name for the record.
I'm Stephanie Young. And I was just getting to that.
Oh, sorry, you were just getting to that. Oh, you were doing the pleasantries first. Sorry about that.
But before moving on, I wanted to introduce myself quickly. My name is Stephanie Young. I'm originally from Fairmont, Minnesota, and I am now a proud junior here at Winona State University, majoring in social work and minoring in child advocacy studies. When I was younger, I came from a low-income family of seven, where I was the youngest and rarely got the chance to wear my own freshly bought clothes, but instead got hand-me-downs from my sister. I was always causing mischief and problems trying to stand out and make myself known. I constantly got bad grades and was at the bottom of my class, so I never saw myself ever going or let alone having the chance to go to college. We were poor, so having money to pay for college was close to non-existent. I had to work to get things I needed and wanted. Because I didn't want to be a burden to my parents with the extra costs. Until a grown-up stepped up into my English class in eighth grade and told the class about educational talent search, which helps middle high school students understand and prepare them for college, showing us FAFSA and grant money we could be eligible to receive. Now I'm in my third year of college and set to graduate in the class of 2023. I myself work two, sometimes three jobs, all on top of being a full-time student here at Winona State. My job consists of working as a certified nursing assistant for Winona Health Hospital, then working when I go home into my hometown in an assisted/memory care nursing home facility. And lastly, I work here for TRIO as a student lead in my work study. After having a graduate college, After having graduated college with my bachelor's degree in social work, I want to further my career going into graduate school to pursue a career towards clinical social work with a focus on working with children or on the mental health spectrum. I'm here today on behalf of the TRIO program here at Winona State University, where I have been actively a part of TRIO ever since eighth grade, where I became a member of Educational Talent Search, and which is a sister program to TRIO that gives high school students the opportunity and understanding to continue into higher education. I am now a student lead working for TRIO here at WSU. I came here to ask for your support and invest into the state grant program and reduce the current assigned student responsibility from only 50% to 46%. As a first-generation student and coming from a low-income family of now just my mother and I, this change to me would mean not having to stress about picking up extra shifts and be able to put more focus into my education. I also wouldn't have to think about cutting my budget down to financially afford groceries or having my mother worry about me having to drop out of school because of the increase of tuition. The state grant is critical to my education, and I hope you all take the time to invest in not only my future, but for everyone who is a part of TRIO across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank you all for taking the time to learn a little bit about me and my journey to where I am today. I wouldn't be where I am now without the HEPL TRIO and being a recipient of Minnesota State Grant and the Pell Grant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we don't have any further public testifiers, but I want to see if we have any questions by our members. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the testimony today. And it was very interesting. I know things have changed a lot since many of us were in college, and I'm sure we could all tell stories of what it was like and what we had to do to accomplish getting for me, it was a bachelor's and then a master's, and it's not easy. It's always difficult. And I was blessed myself with having quite a bit in grants and aid. So I am very fortunate in that. So I just wanted to offer some support for this. My only concern might be just the total fiscal note. It's a little bit high, but I think this might be a better way to approach helping students. You know, we've had a frustrating few weeks here in the higher ed committee and just in the higher ed world as a whole. If anyone's been watching the news, you've seen all kinds of concerns from the Hennepin Technical College president resignation to some concerns at the University of Minnesota system. So I'm a little more comfortable sending money directly to students for them to choose where they want to go and pick a program that works for them. If we're going to be doing any kind of budget, I have no idea what our budget target's going to be, but if there is some sort of budget target, my hope is that we could put some money into the grant program and do some adjustments to the grant program. Not sure if we can do a whole 4%, but because the fiscal note is a bit high, but you know, maybe we'll have a budget target that high. But that seems to be a better answer than some of the budget requests coming forward from the two big systems. So that's where I would put my money if I had the ability to do that, because I do have some significant concerns about the MinState system and the University of Minnesota system, as we've been talking about them for the last few weeks. And the last thing I would say is that one of the biggest concerns I have outstanding is the Hennepin Technical College president, even though he resigned, he will continue to get his salary of $232,000. Yes, that's $232,000 until his contract is up on July 1 of this year. So even though he resigned, he's still getting paid and has been tucked into the system's office. So if you look at some of the media reports, that's what they're reporting. And I did confirm that with the chancellor last night. So that's of grave concern. I think we're doing everyone a disservice when students ultimately and taxpayers ultimately have to pay for someone's bad behavior. He obviously had horrendous behavior for the last 6.5 years, and he will be allowed to continue out his current contract until July 1. So that's incredibly problematic. To get around that, I would encourage this committee to put more money into the grant program so students can choose where they want to go, and it's a direct support to a student. So I know last time this came forward, I wasn't as excited about it, but things have changed. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of trauma and upheaval in the two systems that we support. So thank you, Madam Chair, for listening to my thoughts.
Okay, we are going to wrap up at 3:35, and I see we have one more question. So we will wrap up with Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Howard for bringing this bill forward. And we need to lift up every student. I would like to thank all the testifiers. This is a moment for us to step up. We do have enough resources to go around. We understand that there are challenges, but this moment is for the students.
and supporting them is why we're here today. I just wanted to say thank you so much. I know we had from students, one student told us, if I get a single $1, it's equal to $1 million if I can get any support. So we're there to support them and we'll continue to do that. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of our testifiers today, especially to our students. And we want to wish you the very best in your careers and your academics. So thank you for being here today. Hearing no further discussion. Oh, excuse me, Representative Howard, do you have any closing comments that you'd like to make?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll be incredibly brief because our testifiers were so impactful. And especially thank you to Ms. Young and Ms. Ahmed, in particular to Ms. Ahmed. I'm an Aggie myself. I'm proud of that most days, but I'm especially proud today. So thank you for being here and for sharing your testimony. And I'm gonna close with Ms. Ahmed's words. She said that the state grant program allows her to follow her passion and build a future she is proud of. That's what this is all about and why it merits our support this session. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 2859 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3253 from Representative Mariani. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this bill and we'll plan to wrap up at 4:05. I will move the House File 3252 be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 3252. Representative Mariani, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I trust you can hear me well. I want to say very quickly, it's always a privilege to follow Dr. McDonald and Dr. Miller, especially on a good bill as the one you just heard from Representative Howard. I appreciate the opportunity to bring together a powerful group of Minnesotans to testify and share on House File 3252 with you today. As you all know, I've chosen not to run again to serve in this body. This is most likely the last bill I'll present before the House Higher Ed Committee, which I served on pretty proudly, probably a decade or so ago. 32 years is a long time to do this work. And I've been privileged to work for many of those years with you, Madam Chair, and with Chair Erickson, as well as with others like Representative O'Neill, Sandstein, and Mason. We go back a few years together. And we've been very successful, I think, in passing some very good laws over that period of time. And hopefully we can do that again this year. Throughout those years, I have worked with others to focus constantly on how we can align our state's delivery of opportunities with the unique needs and aspirations of people of color and Indigenous people. I believe it's time to do that now with our state student financial support program, and I think the benefits will accrue to all students. Equity is our best hope for continuing and growing the Minnesota way of life. Prosperity, opportunity, strength rests not only on, but increasingly on, the well-being of these communities. For that, we must challenge ourselves as lawmakers to be smart enough, creative enough, bold enough to keep designing how we support post-secondary to be powerful tools for the advancement of these students. As you all know, my quote-unquote other job is as executive director of the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership. Representative Howard referenced that earlier today. That organization has been around for over 30 years, working for the success of students of color and Indigenous students in Minnesota. We do that through broad collaborations that include K-12, post-secondary, communities of color, public and private institutions. We produce research and policy recommendations. We do that by convening broadly and very inclusively all sorts of stakeholders to the table to then advise that research and that policy and produce things like the 2020 brief that Representative Howard referenced entitled Reducing Racial Disparities in College Completion. You can find that at our website. I encourage you to take a look at that. House File 3252, the recommendations in it come from that brief. And as many of you know, my particular style of policymaking, it includes both finance and policy and looks for the nexus between those. Madam Chair, as I exit this body, I want to share one of the things that I've learned over the years, and that is that the best way that we can serve our dynamic people of Minnesota is to be bold and to always shape our state systems to fit the realities of our people and not the other way around, not to force people to shape the systems that we've created, even though they've been very good systems. It's about being where people are at and pulling the best from them. I think that's a testimony you heard from the students earlier today. This committee has historically understood this, and I encourage you to honor that legacy and be bold again. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn to my testifiers, who will then talk about the bill and the elements of the bill and the rationale behind that.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Now with us today is Dr. Bruce Corey. If you could please state your name for the record and your organization, that would proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Chair Bernardi and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Dr. Bruce Corey, professor of economics at Concordia University, and speak in support of House File 3252. It's an honor to work with Chair Mariani as he leaves a lasting legacy through his work on education equity and public safety. In the last session, I shared with this committee four pillars for LANA BIPOC student success, mainly affordable education, multi-tiered support systems, culturally intelligent learning environment, and shared governance with a focus on disaggregated metrics and graduation rates. I do hope at the end of this legislative session, you make meaningful investments in all these areas. I also shared with this committee that you are stewards of a $1.5 trillion portfolio of Alana student talent. The 60,000 plus Alana BIPOC undergraduate students invest annually an estimated $1 billion for their education, both in tuition costs as well as on spending in the local economy on housing, food, etc. They are a very strong presence among essential workers. You may also be aware of the Corey Plaintiff Plan that was considered by the Special Panel on Redistricting and integrated into the new legislative districts. The court's final order documents the role of the Corey Plaintiff's recommendation to provide adequate representation to the economic and political interest of the Alana communities in Minnesota. Our intervention made the case that we need strong political representation of the $1.4 trillion ethnic economy in Minnesota that has a significant presence currently in 125 legislative districts in the state. If proper investments are made, this will close the racial disparity gaps in Minnesota. Our GDP will increase by $287 billion over the longer term. Alana communities make up over 20% of the current population of Minnesota and pay an estimated $3 billion in local taxes, providing a very strong, powerful rationale for at least $2 billion of the surplus to be invested in wealth-building strategies to close the huge racial disparities in Minnesota. Specifically in this bill, I want to focus on the key reality that prevents Alana students in your legislative districts from enrolling in a higher education institution and graduating in a timely manner. The financial cost of education, both tuition and living expenses, are a major hurdle. I see it in the hardworking students in my classes who work hard to pay their bills and study at the same time. A RAND Corporation study found that grants to students help improve graduation rates. I suggest the legislature invest at least 10% of the estimated $1 billion investment at Alana undergraduate students make annually for their education in Minnesota, specifically investing $100 million to the state grant program. Data from the state grant program shows that it's very accessible to Alana students, and my colleague Megan Rogozowski will provide some more context in their testimony. A recent report of Deed shows vast economic sectors in Minnesota facing with an aging population and where the fast-growing Alana BIPOC youth population offer a steady pool of homegrown talent. You can change the trajectory of our tight labor market and push most students into the workforce through addressing the most significant barrier to education, graduation in Minnesota. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Dr. Corey. It's always nice to have you and for our committee. Megan Rozelski is our next testifier. Please state your name and organization for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Megan Rozelski, and I'm a board member of the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership and the Director of Research at the Minnesota Private College Council. Thank you for the chance to testify in support of House File 3252. This bill asks the legislature to advance equity in higher education through an $87.5 million investment in the state grants. This bill lowers the student share from 50% to 46%. The legislature recognized that the student share was too high 20 years ago and lowered the student share to 46%. The legislature then raised the student share back up to 50% in 2013-14, and it has been set at that level ever since. Students cannot afford to cover half of their college tuition and living costs. Keeping the student share at 50% makes college unaffordable for too many low and middle income Minnesotans, and it hits students of color and Native American students especially hard. This bill also increases the LME to 115% of the poverty level for 9 months. The current LME is not enough to cover the living costs, books, food, and other expenses students face. The bill also extends state grant eligibility from 8 to 10 semesters, and Dr. Fernando Rodriguez will address that in part of the bill in his testimony. Lowering the student share and increasing the LME would increase the average state grant by $875. The maximum grant for full-time students would increase by $1,000 to $1,300. This will have a significant impact on college affordability, efficiently targeting funds to the students who need it most. Minnesota is facing a college enrollment crisis since the pandemic hit, with fewer students enrolling in and more students dropping out of college. This will eventually become an employment crisis as businesses are unable to find enough employees with the skills that they need. Research cites financial concerns as the number one reason people drop out of college. This has long-term impacts for people's lives and our economy because workers with an associate or bachelor degree earn significantly more than those who have only a high school degree. Minnesota will not be able to solve our equity caps in college enrollment and completion without investing in students through the state grant program. This investment will help all 66,000 students who will receive a state grant next year. We need to invest in the post-secondary education of low-income students and students of color and Native American students now. And this investment in the state grant is the best way for the legislature to make a direct and immediate impact on college affordability for the students who need it most. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. With us next to testify is Leah Tawe, Dr. Robert John Peterson. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and organization for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leah Tawa, Dr. Robert John Peterson. Honored to be here today. I'd like to change things up just a little bit and defer my time to my esteemed colleague from the University of Minnesota, Dr. Fernando Rodriguez, so that we have time to hear from both him as well as our student testifier, who has a pre-recorded video. So I defer my time, Madam Chair.
Great. Well, thank you, Dr. Peterson. We have with us Dr. Fernando Rodriguez, and can state their name for the testimony and for the organization. That would be great. Welcome to the committee.
Yes. Hello, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. My name is Fernando Rodriguez, and I'm the director of the Multicultural Center for Academic Excellence and Circle of Indigenous Nations at the University of Minnesota. I appreciate this opportunity to speak in support of Section 3, Subdivision 9, Lines 2.2 through 2.30 of this proposed bill. That is to increase access to aid to 10 semesters. As a higher education educator and scholar with 20 years service to the field, I know for sure that the ideal college journey that is sold to students today does not fit this reality of generation of learners that they have to navigate. Specifically, limiting financial support to 8 academic semesters completely excludes the reality students face to complete a college education. Today's generation of learners, our future workforce here in the state of Minnesota, need the ability to balance their academic progress, home responsibilities, mental health, and well-being, as we heard in the previous testimonies, as well as, more specifically, for students who come from underrepresented backgrounds and who often begin their college journeys at 2-year colleges or community colleges, the limitations of aid to 8 semesters significantly reduces their chances of completing a 4-year university education. Now, as higher education institutions and students alike navigate the widespread impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on student attendance and matriculation, this change is forward-thinking and proactive as we anticipate the barriers for funding for higher education to increase and grow more grave amongst the most student populations specifically, and it is just simply the right thing to do. The state of Minnesota, as has been stated, will face gaps in the workforce, and so this increase to 10 semesters will actually allow us to educate the next generation of workers so that they are equipped to meet the workforce demands of our state. Finally, this minimizes the burdens of our students, growing student debt so that they can financially contribute to our growing economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Doctor. And now with us, we have Zeke Jackson. If you could please state your name and organization for the record. He's from, we're looking forward to seeing you today, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a pre-recorded video of Mr. Jackson as a student from the University of Minnesota. So with your permission, I'd like to show the video now.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Peterson.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to share my perspective on HF 3252. My name is Zeke Jackson, and I'm a junior at the University of Minnesota studying political science and finance. I believe this bill is incredibly timely and is a step in the right direction for Minnesota students. Today, we find ourselves in a unique financial and economic environment. It's an environment that presents challenges that this committee has the power to address. Despite the massive surplus in Minnesota's budget, our students are struggling. Over the last decade, tuition at the University of Minnesota has risen by 32%. Over the last year, inflation has risen by 7.5%. Meanwhile, here at the U, student wages have barely budged. So I support this bill for a few key reasons. First, the timing is right to conduct an analysis on the optimization of Minnesota's work-study programs. I can't speak for all the work-study programs across the state, but I believe the University of Minnesota is generally abusing its unique status as a land-grant institution to depress student wages. Although some students here are paid up to $15 per hour, there are many more who are working closer to $10 per hour. Now, in our state, the education, higher education model in general is a behemoth of an industry that's putting our youth into debt before they've even started their careers. And that's a systemic issue, but the state grant is an effective solution for right now. Personally, the state of Minnesota has made my education possible. The funding I've received allows me to pay my bills, to pay for my groceries, and to work fewer than 20 hours per week. The financial aid that the state provides me gives me the freedom to focus on my education and apply the skills that I'm gaining from my education to my passions. Scaling that up is worth way more than the cost of this bill. So please invest in this bill, invest in me, invest in the current and future students of Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration. I can be reached at my school email at jack1379@umn.edu. Thanks.
Back to you, Dr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Leah Tawa, Dr. John Peterson here. I will defer any final comments so that Chair Mariani, if he has any final comments, he may make them, and then we can move with questions and answers at your discretion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And we did you want to say something right now, Representative Mariani, or do you want us to go to our questions of our members?
Madam Chair, I think it's wise for the committee to have a conversation.
Right. Okay, so we don't have any further public testifiers, but I will pause for a moment to see if we have questions from our members. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that this was stated explicitly, but the fiscal note is pretty high. I mean, I mentioned that the previous bill was a little high. This is quite high. In 2023, the cost is $82.5 million. But looking past that, it's $182.5 million. So $182.5 million in the tails for the biennium. The $82 million was half of a biennium. So that's a significant increase. I mean, I remember back a few years ago when I was working on the target for higher education, and the entire target, in addition to the base, was only $100 million. So close to $200 million that's a very, very big ask for one bill. So I don't see how we could do that. I know we have a big surplus, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be there forever. We've got a huge war that's just ensuing in the Ukraine. And, you know, I serve on the Ways and Means Committee, as does the chair and several members here. And we were really told a very cautionary tale, even though on paper it says that we'll have a $9 billion surplus. The cautionary tale was the world is a little bit in upheaval right now. And so they did their forecast before war broke out in Ukraine. Russia is stepping up their offense, and the world is taking notice, and now the world is starting to get involved. And so the likelihood that we'll actually have cash in the door of $9 billion is not so great. I just think this is a very large ask when you're looking at the tails, when you're looking at our obligations moving forward. $200 million, or nearly $200 million, is an awful lot of money in one program moving forward. So I would just say this is, the previous bill was a little high. This is very, very high. This is a very, very big ask. It wasn't that long ago that we had an entire target of $100 million. So just be very cautious as we move forward.
Well, thank you. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to thank Chair Mariani for bringing this bill forward. And Dr. Corey, it's always great to be with you. What I'd like to say is it is a large bill. I agree with Representative Lead O'Neill. It is an expensive bill, but I often talk about the fact that we talk about costs, but we never talk about the upside, what we get for the money that we spend and for the investments that we make. You know, I'm old enough to remember the advertisement that the public service announcement that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And the investments that we make in our future by investing in our children is always a conversation that we should be willing to have at the Capitol. I especially like it that this bill includes LME. And I agree with Dr. Rodriguez that making sure that people have the time to complete their education when sometimes life zigs and zags and we don't have a straight path is critical. So I just want to say thank you for being willing to come here today and speak about the real need, the real costs of the investments that we need to be making at this time in our state's history. And these honest and frank conversations about the costs are very refreshing to me. And thank you again for being here today to have that conversation.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And then we have Representative Thompson on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Mr. Hopkins. For Nathan Hopkins, is he available?
Mr. Hopkins, are you available?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, he is. Go ahead, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. I would imagine you had some input into the construction of this proposal. And I'm looking at Section 5, Subdivision 2, the process for determining if developmental education is necessary. You know, it's a good change to leave the word remediating and delete that and go to the new language. But I'm wondering, do you know what this process looks like at other universities or colleges in other states?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, sorry, could you clarify what process you're referring to?
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Determining whether a student qualifies for developmental education or is placed in that program.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know how this works in other states, but I'd be happy to do some research on that and get back to the committee.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that would be great. Maybe somebody else. I didn't ask Representative Mariani because I thought that maybe, you know, he, like most of us do, is we put our faith in our researchers and in the reviser to construct the language. But I'm always concerned about the process for placing students in developmental education, because often I think today it is necessary. And I noticed that this is very permissive, and that's good. Multiple measures are good. But if we could, if Mr. Hopkins, you could find out what is done in other states so we know how that's treated, so we're not an anomaly, or that this makes good sense for our students to know that there is just a real need to apply yourself in the K-12 level. I always look at 9-12 as being essential times in the life of a student to ensure that even if they don't even think about college at the time, that they pay attention to their grades, to their study habits, and, you know, even to the variety of tests that they take. So I'm just curious, and if you have access to any of that, I'd appreciate learning that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Erickson and Mr. Hopkins. Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to Chair Mariani. I know I heard him say this is going to be his last year, but we just got to barricade ourselves in front of his door before he try to run out of here on us. But honestly, I wanted to say, if not us, then who? And if not now, then when? We have to definitely start making bold and courageous investments into what I consider our future. And I promise the return on investment, I heard Representative Cleburne say, talk about the return on investment. The return on investment will be greater later. We can't put a price tag on our future. And honestly, y'all, like I honestly picked the raise my hand because I know what it's like. Like I've actually figured out a lot of creative ways to eat ramen noodles in college. Ramen noodles and hot dogs, ramen noodles and onions. I figured out a lot of, but I was very hungry and very poor, and I couldn't study where my next meal was coming from. Like my friends, their parents would send them money, so they have like the latest, nicest clothes, and here I am wearing my brother's shoes. So I honestly know what it's like to be poor in college, and it's kind of hard to focus on your education and then have to focus on, like, I don't want to call my mom. She's poor too. So I know what it's like. So I just want to say thank you for, because this is like, I don't know if people know that this is like 1993 for me. So I'm a little bit older than people think I am, but honestly, the return on investment, I promise you, we will not lose a penny. And I just wanted to say thank you to Chair Mariani, and don't be trying to sneak out of here on us either, man.
Okay. Yes. Don't see any further questions. I will put it back to Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'll be brief. I appreciate the conversation. Committee work's the best work. Because this is where we can exchange ideas powerfully with one another. We should always do that vigorously. Let me just very quickly say a couple things. One is that I really want to encourage you to visit the MNEP website and look at the higher ed brief that I mentioned. I think it'll help fill in some of the answers to some of the questions here. For instance, on developmental ed, the issue is not so much about not helping to fill in the academic shortfalls for students as much as how do we do that? What's an empowering way to do that? And then I think on the very excellent question of cost, because that's what a finance committee needs to wrestle with, I want to encourage us to think about what we need to do. Think about the cost-benefit analysis of what we need to do, and know that we are on a demographic cliff in this state. And so my suggestion is that if we keep doing the things we the way we've done them in the past, given the unique demographic challenges that we have, Representative Howard spoke through this and his bill, we're probably going to fall short. And that would be a shame for such an incredibly powerful, dynamic state as Minnesota. Think also about a menu. You know, there's a menu of issues here. The LME, the shared responsibility, the semesters issue. You can approach it that way as well in terms of where your compromises and comfort might be. The purpose of the bill is to lay forward a vision that offers you choices, even though I strongly support that you support, or encourage you to support the whole bill. And then finally, be bold. That's what we're in many ways required to be, and engage our constituents on why it's important for us to be bold. Madam Chair, I really appreciate the time. You've always been a gracious colleague and a good chairperson. I've always traditionally appreciated and respected this committee and its deliberations. And I wish you much success as you go forward in being bold on these really important issues this year. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much. And with Representative Thompson, you still have your hand up. I'm assuming it's from before.
No, I'm done. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's fine. That's what I assumed. Hearing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3252 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Mariani, and to all of our testifiers today. Thank you. Now, if we are on our agenda, we have House File 3776 from Representative Noor. We have 30 minutes scheduled for this bill, and we plan to wrap up by 4:30. And I will move that House File 3776 be referred to the Tax Committee. So now we have before us House File 3776, and Representative Noor, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a small bill with a small ask. The Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students is a matching grant program available to eligible institutions. This program is administered by Office of Higher Education. Madam Chair and members, this program is designed to meet the needs, the immediate needs of students facing food insecurity, housing insecurity, and basic needs insecurity. Madam Chair and members, this is a small ask. As first portion of the bill, it allows the portion of EAPS, which is the Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students, that is not used for qualified tuition and related expenses as tax deductible. As you know, we have done this for many programs, and this will help students as they receive a small portion of the emergency assistance. On the second part of the bill, Madam Chair and members, this bill allows increase of EAPS to 800,000 from 319,000. Madam Chair and members, we know that the demand for assistance is higher than what we have allocated for this program. This will help students facing financial insecurity to meet the needs so that they can complete college. And we know that in the environment that we're in, when students are struggling and they're not able to meet their needs, they may end up not completing higher education. So this will extremely help the students in need. And I'm asking for your support as we discuss this bill. And with that, if there's any question, I know Office of Higher Education is available to answer any technical questions, but I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you, Representative Noor. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Representative Noor. How did you arrive at the $800,000 figure for the appropriation in 2024. Is there some data that you collected to determine that?
Reverend Noor.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, there's data from the previous 2020, I believe, that we received. It showed that there's more than 1,000 some individuals received, and only 600 were eligible to receive on an average of 545. So this will come to par into number of students that we're going to be serving. So looking at that data and what we know of the request coming to the institutions that are eligible, it's a matching grant that the institutions allow the students to receive their assistance when they're facing financial insecurity.
Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a final statement that, you know, every year is different. So, you know, we have to be sure that our data is accurate and fits the particular time. So, you know, I'm just not sure that that amount is what is going to be needed. I think it's a bit high, but I guess I'll wait and study the data when it comes out and available. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Members, is there any are there any further questions? Okay, seeing none, I will have Representative Noor make his closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As you can see, this is a really small amount. We know the number of students. We know the number of students who are facing homelessness. We know that there are a few individuals who are applying for this program. 800,000 is a very small amount compared to the need that we are aware of. So this will help students across the state to meet their needs and to be able to continue with their higher education, post-secondary education. So I ask for your support. Thank you so much for hearing this bill, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much. And having no further questions from our members or further testifiers, I will renew my motion that House File 3776, as amended, be referred to the Tax Committee. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Vice Chair Christensen.
Aye.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please, Vice Chair Christensen?
Aye.
Christensen, aye.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Albright.
Albright, aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, no.
Erickson, nay. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Heintzeman is excused. Representative Howard.
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, nay. Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, no.
Crenshaw, nay. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, no.
Meckland, nay. Representative Noor.
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Sandsted.
Aye.
Sandsted, aye. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. All right, Madam Chair, we have 13 ayes, 4 nays, and 2 excuse.
Okay, there being 13 ayes, 4 nays, 2 excuse, the motion passes and House File 3776, as amended, is referred to taxes. Members, thank you for being here today, and to all of our testifiers and to our student testifiers, best wishes to you on your academics and your career. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.